The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to comment on today's program, send us an email at td@kpcg.fm. Just send us your email today. And don't forget, as I said last week or the week before, to tell us where you're listening from and what you listen to, whether it's the podcast or the live stream or what. We'd like to hear from you. I'll update you later in the second segment on the Mystery of the Ages goal. Just a little bit of a follow-up from what we discussed last Monday. And then also tell you about the stats from this past weekend, the program on which we advertised the Sabbath booklet, Which Day is the Christian Sabbath? And in the second segment, too, we'll be going through some of the mail that has been coming in recent days, some very encouraging responses from some of our listeners and also from a couple of viewers, those watching the television program here in the UK region. Well, the end of the Merkel era in Germany is within sight. That's what the Financial Times wrote last week. It said at the beginning of this year, notice again just how quickly things are changing. It says at the beginning of this year, Angela Merkel had a good claim to be the most successful politician in the world. Think about that. One of the most successful, one of the most popular politicians in, not just in Europe, in the world. It says the German chancellor had won three successive election victories. She was the dominant political figure in Europe, hugely popular at home. And look at how fast all that has changed. I mean, almost overnight. It's very different now in Germany. It says here, but the refugee crisis that has broken over Germany is likely to spell the end of the Merkel era. Think about that, to go from the most popular politician in the world to a point within just a few weeks, a few months. And now a number of commentators are saying, it's over. That's it. With the country in line to receive more than 1 million asylum seekers this year alone, public anxiety is mounting, and so is criticism of Ms. Merkel from within her own party. And we'll have more to say about just the division within her alliance there, her political alliance. Even in her own party, as it says there, it says some of her close political allies acknowledge that it is now distinctly possible that the chancellor will have to leave office before the next general election in 2017. Even if she sees out a full term, the notion of a fourth Merkel administration, widely discussed a few months ago, now seems improbable. What once was the most popular leader in Europe, perhaps one of the most popular politicians in the world, now the talk is that she won't even make it through to the end of this term. That she'll have to leave office even before the next general election. This Financial Times piece talks about how that her government has lost control of this situation, the refugee crisis, how that it's putting such a burden, such a strain on the social services in Germany, on the astronomical costs of this wide open border. It talks about violence coming from the far right, violent attacks against asylum seekers. They're on the increase. And then, as I say, politicians in Merkel's own party panicking. It's all such a contrast, the article says, with the calm and control that Ms. Merkel used to radiate captured by her nickname, the German word for mom. It says, throughout 2014, as Ms. Merkel led Europe's response to the Eurozone crisis and Russia's annexation of Crimea, German voters seemed more inclined than ever to place their faith in the judgment of the chancellor. The refugee crisis, however, revealed another side to Ms. Merkel. Some voters seem to have concluded that mom, quote-unquote, has gone mad. Flinging open Germany's borders to the wretched of the earth. That's the way they see it. So many disgruntled Germans who can't understand what the government is doing. Who can't understand why the government would react this way. This Financial Times article says, regardless of the chancellor's personal fate and reputation, the refugee crisis marks a turning point. Yes, it does. This is a turning point, for sure. The decade after Ms. Merkel first came to power in 2005 now looks like a blessed period for Germany, in which the country was able to enjoy peace, prosperity, and international respect while keeping the troubles of the world at a safe distance. That golden era is now over. And so what next for Germany as we enter into a new era, as we enter into times of trouble, as we enter into one crisis after another crisis? What next for Germany? Who will lead Germany next? Who will lead all of Europe next? It's something to think about. We'll spend more time on this in the second segment. But back to this point about the strain that this crisis is putting on her allies in government, Merkel's party. This, too, is from the Financial Times. It says, the oldest marriage in German politics was sealed amid the rubble of the country's post-war rebuilding and has weathered challenges from reunification to the Eurozone debt crisis. But the current refugee crisis is straining to the limit the conservative alliance between Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union and the Bavaria-based Christian Social Union that has been a bulwark of Germany's enduring political stability. And so this division between the CDU and the CSU, these longtime allies, there's sharp division now between these two because of the refugee crisis. Quite a few discussions over the weekend to just try to mend the fences and to hold everything together. Richard Palmer on the Trumpet Hour, by the way, from Friday, he talked about these discussions going on behind the scenes. He talked about this potential split among these allies, all the tensions. The Financial Times says the tensions between the longtime allies reflect their evolution over the years, as well as the geography of the migrant crisis, which is hitting Bavaria with full force. Most of the 1 million refugees expected to arrive this year in Germany will do so by crossing Bavaria's border with Austria. About 10,000 have been arriving daily, stretching the police and the local authorities, prompting CSU to demand more money and support from Berlin. And so there were the reports coming in today about yesterday's discussions between the CSU and the CDU. And one, according to a report today, talked about this being a government crisis as they're working to try to hold things together, even as refugees are streaming across the border into Bavaria. That southern region of Germany that's just getting hit especially hard from these wide open doors that Merkel's administration has extended to those fleeing from Syria, from Turkey, and elsewhere. Well, I want to step back just a moment, keeping with this theme on Germany, and perhaps look at just the bigger picture, the nation itself, not just the leadership, not just the government. As I say, we'll talk more about what's next in terms of German government. But this article here from The Spectator, it has to do with Germany's identity, its post-war identity. And this Spectator piece, while it talks about the new identity that Germany took on after just being humiliated, defeated, demilitarized, there at the end of World War II, that while it came on and appeared to be kinder and gentler as a German nation, not so nationalistic, but now this Spectator piece here again, drawing on the refugee crisis, is wondering if anything really has changed insofar as Germany's identity is concerned. It says here, anger is growing at Merkel's handling of the migration crisis. Germany, which has only recently reconciled itself to the idea that it is a country of immigration, must now integrate vast numbers of asylum seekers, beginning with the million who are expected to arrive this year. At the same time, the country has been hit by two huge corruption scandals involving Volkswagen and DFB, and the DFB and the German Football Federation. It says the odds are that Merkel will survive. It's hard to see at the moment who can replace her. Well, there is a replacement. He's out there somewhere. We've talked about this this possibility. Well, whether it's the one right after Merkel or just a little ways further on. In any event, we know a new government is coming. And that's what this article suggests. It's just that it's hard to see at the moment anyone that could replace her. But it continues, the unprecedented challenges she now faces threaten something more fundamental, Germany's post-war identity. That's what he's wondering about here. What is this identity for Germany? Are they a country of immigration? It says Germans like to believe that they have moved beyond nationhood in the classical sense, that they've developed a post-national identity based on constitutional patriotism. In other words, Germany has developed a civic as opposed to ethnic nationalism based on a liberal political culture and embodied in the basic law, the Federal Republic's constitution. And then it goes back to discuss some of the more recent history, not just right after World War II, but in the 1960s and 70s and so on. It says, for a long time, the embryonic post-nationalism that developed in the Federal Republic from the 1960s onwards coexisted uneasily with a rather regressive citizenship law based on the principle of citizenship by blood, which went back to 1913. Until the law was reformed by Gerhard Schroeder's red-green government in 2000, Germany continued to define itself in ethnic terms. Even second and third generation Turkish immigrants were officially foreigners. It has only been during the last decade or so that Germany has come around to the idea that it is a multi-ethnic society, and many Germans are still uneasy about that idea, as shown by the sudden emergence of the anti-immigrant movement, Pegida. Germany is post-national more in theory than in practice. All of a sudden now, you have these anti-immigrant movements gaining in popularity. You have this push for nationalism. It says, moreover, from the creation of the Federal Republic onwards, the pride in their country that many citizens felt often came not from the German Constitution or from dealing with the Nazi past, but from economic success. There is, and has been, a pride, a strong German pride in its growing power, its economic success in particular. Further on in this article, it says, while intellectuals identified with the idea of a post-national identity or what has even been called a Holocaust identity, ordinary Germans instead took pride in the extraordinary economic success of the Federal Republic. The tension between these two versions of German post-war identity was expressed most clearly in the statement allegedly made by the Bavarian Christian Democrat leader, Franz Joseph Strauss, that a people, this is a quote from him, a people that has achieved the economic success that we have has a right to hear nothing more about Auschwitz. It's time to move on, he said. It's time to forget that past. It's time to embrace that power position that Germany is in. It says here then, in this context, Merkel's problems take on greater significance. The migration crisis is clearly the biggest and most important. When the scale of the influx of asylum seekers to Germany became apparent in September, Merkel told the German public, we can do it. We can do this. We can absorb all of these refugees. We can take them in. This is our identity, she says. We're a country of immigration. But others are now saying, no, we're not. We certainly can't take in this many. The article says, while Merkel's supporters see her approach to the migration crisis as bold, her critics, mainly on the right, see it as reckless. There has already been an angry backlash from voters, and that could increase since the crisis began, the Euroskeptic and increasingly xenophobic Alternative für Deutschland, or the AfD, which had seemed to be falling apart after its founder, left to form a new party in July, has been rising in the polls again. Meanwhile, attacks on asylum seekers have taken place on an almost daily basis. It says the resurgence of this party and all these attacks, it shows just how fragile Germany's sense of identity remains. Finally, it says here, when the Merkel era does finally come to an end, it is not at all clear what kind of country she will leave behind. And so the question is, when that era ends, what comes next? Well, as you know, if you've been listening to this program for very long, or following thetrumpet.com, or reading our literature, or reading our new booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, you know that the Bible has a lot to say about what comes next. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your feedback. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just to update you on the Mystery of the Ages goal with a few more requests that trickled in last week following the program that we had offering Mystery of the Ages, the mystery of the church. That was the subject of the program in particular. But we had 114 total requests a week ago, bringing our total to 1,380 for the year. That's 620 shy of our goal. This next week, as I mentioned to you last week, we'll be replaying The Mystery of God Should Be Finished, the program that we ran on April the 12th that brought in 92 responses before we added the two extra stations. And the one in which we offered Mystery of the Ages as well as Malachi's message. So that certainly is something to keep in mind, something to be praying about as we head into this next weekend, where we will be offering yet another time Mystery of the Ages. This past weekend we offered Which Day is the Christian Sabbath on the program, Remember the Sabbath Day, to keep it holy. That brought in 135 requests for Mr. Armstrong's booklet, a very exciting response. That booklet, really, it's a small book. I don't have the page count here with me, but there's 10 or 11 chapters in that very thorough and detailed coverage of the Sabbath command. 135 of those being mailed out this week to people in and around the U.K. region, a few letters of response that we've been getting, emails as well. One in response to Friday's program, where we talked about the impact of radio. That was our 100th program this year. The Trumpet Daily, 100 programs, radio programs that we've produced thus far. And in that program, we just talked about the impact that radio had on Mr. Armstrong's work, going back to 1933. This individual writes, I remember listening to Mr. Armstrong on a little handheld transistor radio when I was a teenager back in the 1960s. So here's one of our listeners today, no longer a teenager, but hearkening back to the 1960s, 50-some years ago, when he would listen to Mr. Armstrong over the airwaves. This here is a response from one of our viewers, our Key of David viewers here in the UK. He writes, I love the presentations and am benefiting from hearing the word. It says, I've also read some of the booklets that you have kindly sent me free of charge. Is there a way I can make a donation as a way of appreciation for your excellent materials? That's coming from Essex here in the UK. This next one from Shropshire, I think is how you say it. He writes, thank you for my copy of The Incredible Human Potential. May I have a list of the other literature, please? I'm trying to understand life and live it as God intended for us. It says, as he did for the first men and women. Thank you very much for the material. This next one comes from Scotland. Thanks a lot for sending me the Trumpet magazine. The articles on the currency war and the Europe of the Bible take shape. We're really first class. Also, I watch on the TV channels, The Key of David. It's the first time that we've watched it on TV. And then this last one comes from all the way from Spain in Europe. Comes from actually a prison in Spain. He writes, I want to use this opportunity to thank you and your church for bringing me more closer to God. Let me inform your church that the magazines which I have been receiving from your church have changed my life, not only me, but including my friends here in prison. Thanks once again. That, as I say, coming from Spain. Well, with the end of the Merkel era in sight, now is as good a time as any to begin thinking about what's next for Germany. What does the Bible have to say about that latter-day government, that latter-day administration, that latter-day leader of the German nation? Let's begin our study over in Isaiah 10. The Bible, as you well know, it prophesies the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, with Germany, as we've said so many times, being the dominant power of that empire. And look at what's happened just in these last two decades or so. Even as Germany continues to wrestle with its identity, what kind of nation or what kind of people it is, the Bible has a lot to say about that identity. But look at the power first. And all of the commentators that have drawn attention to this emerging power since the financial crisis that began in 2008 in particular, you've seen how these crises have just empowered the German nation. From March earlier this year, we talked about this in a radio program months ago, that article from Der Spiegel that compared Germany today to the Holy Roman Empire, which, of course, is what we're seeing. It talked about in that article about how even the term Reich simply refers to a dominion with a central power exerting control over many different peoples. And that's what you have in Europe today. Der Spiegel said, according to this definition, would it be wrong to speak of a German Reich in the economic realm? An empire is in play, at least in the economic realm. The Eurozone is clearly ruled by Germany. It does, it says, however, have a significant say in the fates of millions of people from other countries. Well, there's others in addition to Berlin that have some authority, too. That's what Spiegel brings out. But Germany's certainly the dominant force. Simon Heffer at the Daily Mail, this is from a few years ago, where Hitler failed by military means to conquer Europe, modern Germans are succeeding through trade and financial discipline. Welcome to the Fourth Reich. See, he's not alone in calling this the Fourth Reich. He's not alone in calling this an empire. This same author, 2 years later, he said, this is in 2013, history shows it is always only a matter of time before Germany ends up dominating Europe. After years of refusing to assert itself, Germany's time has come. The Fourth Reich is here without a shot being fired. And the rest of Europe and the world had better get used to it. Yes, sir, you better get used to it. It's here. In the Telegraph from June of this year, Germany finds itself at the geographic and economic center, and therefore increasingly the political center, too, of the new Europe. No longer do all roads lead to Paris, but to Berlin. They lead right to Berlin. Let's notice what God prophesies here. This is Isaiah 10 and verse 5. Read along with me if your Bible's nearby and see what God says. You talk about a national identity. God says, O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is mine indignation. This has been a nation historically with a very warlike identity. You can see it in these stone murals inside the British Museum going back to the Assyrian people from thousands of years ago. You can see it more recently with the history of World War I and World War II. But God says here that the Assyrian is the rod of his anger. And verse 6 says, I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. And so God sends this rod of anger against an hypocritical nation. His people Israel. He sends this rod against a lukewarm church as well. In other words, God will use Germany and this empire forming in Europe. He'll use it to correct his people, to correct the people of Israel. Verse 7 says, how be it, he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and to cut off nations, not a few. See, there's going to be a mind change. This is what those who are out there saying that Europe is dying, this is what they don't understand. They don't understand what Daniel 2 says about the mixture of iron and miry clay. They don't understand about how all this division and strife within the Union itself, they don't understand how that too is prophesied. They don't understand about this prophesied leader spoken of in Daniel 8 primarily, but really alluded to here as well. Verse 7, where it says, howbeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so. If you were to go to this leader or these leaders and tell them that the Europe that's now forming will turn into a war machine that's going to cut off nations, plural, they wouldn't believe it. They'd say you're crazy. But that's what God says. Read on your own time, Habakkuk chapter 1. We have a booklet on that that prophecy as well, where God says, I raise up the Chaldeans or the Assyrian people, that bitter and hasty nation which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. And then verse 11 in Habakkuk 1, it says, then shall his mind change. There's going to be a mind change. There's one that's going to come on the scene, coming out of the heart of Europe, coming out of the heart of Germany, no doubt, that's going to gain power by using flatteries, the Bible says. A real smooth talker, a real eloquent leader, and yet one that is going to experience a mind change. Notice Daniel chapter 8. I mentioned this just a minute ago. Let's look at this prophecy, Daniel 8. You can see here in verse 26, it talks about this vision relating to the far future, as it says in Moffat. It wasn't understood in Daniel's day. That's not when it was to be fulfilled. Look at Daniel 8 here in verse 17. It says, understand, O son of man, that the vision is for the time of the end. That's what it says in the Revised Standard Version. It's for the time of the end. Look, we have so much material to help you. Daniel Unsealed at Last, one of our more popular booklets, and then the new one that we just started distributing this year, the one I mentioned before the break, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. We have so much that you can study on this very subject. It says in verse 18, this is Daniel 8, now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make you know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed, the end shall be. The last end. I mean, this is where we are. Really, as my father has said before, the empire's already there in Europe. There's some downsizing and coalescing that still remains. But the empire is there. The mixture of iron and clay is there. The power is there. The weapons are there. It's just waiting for the emperor. It's an empire waiting for its king, waiting for its emperor. Verse 23, and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. That's what we're about to see. That's what's coming in Europe. A king of fierce countenance. Now he's going to come in by flatteries. He's going to come in. That's what Daniel 11 and verse 21 says. As I say, a real smooth talker. A real charismatic leader. A charismatic individual. Verse 24, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper in practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. This is referring to a strong man that's going to lead that resurrected Roman Empire. Coming in by flatteries and then experiencing this mind change that the Bible talks about in Habakkuk 1, in Isaiah 10. Look at how fast the events are unfolding. Well, it was just earlier this year when Miss Merkel was one of the more popular politicians in all the world. If you look at the strong leader that is prophesied to come, I mean, even the fact that Russia already has its prophesied strong man referred to there in Ezekiel 38, Europe's going to get its Putin, so to speak. Europe, too, is going to get its strong man. And when he does appear, the Bible says that he will destroy wonderfully. There's a power behind this man. There's a power behind this empire. Satan is the god of this world. He's stirring nations. He's filled with wrath. And of course, as we read in Isaiah 10, God himself will use this geopolitical system as his rod of anger to correct his people, to humble his people, to humble the modern-day descendants of ancient Israel. Verse 25 says, "And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many." By peace, flatteries, smooth talking. And yet the whole world is going to be drawn into this bloody conflict. World war is what we're talking about here. Another world war. Verse 26, "And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Wherefore, shut you up the vision, for it shall be for many days." It's for the latter days. Notice what my father wrote. This is in his booklet, Daniel Unsealed at Last. He said, "If God did so much to help Daniel fight against Satan while this was being revealed," and you can read more about that in Daniel 9, "but if God did so much to help Daniel fight against the devil while this was being revealed, what kind of battle do you think we will face as God opens our minds to actually understand and proclaim this message? What kind of resistance do you think this work will face? What kind of resistance do you think my father will face as he delivers this message over the Key of David with as many articles and booklets as well? So many people, so many brethren of God, so many family members in God's church have caved in to the pressure and have abandoned God's truth. And are not fulfilling, they're not out there fulfilling God's commission to proclaim this truth to this dying world. One final verse here, it says in verse 27, "And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it." He was astonished. And he didn't even understand this vision. Now, how should it impact us if you get, as I say, Daniel Unsealed at Last? If you request our new booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy? We have another one on Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. Mr. Armstrong, of course, had a lot to say about this seventh and final resurrection of that Holy Roman Empire, and we understand these prophecies. We understand God's truth, God's warnings. And yet still, so many people today, even many in God's church, have lost interest. They're no longer astonished. Daniel was. He didn't even understand it all. But he knew this was of God. He knew this was God's message. As we look at what's happening today in Europe, in Germany in particular, the empire, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, it has already risen. It's just waiting for its emperor, who gets into office through flatteries. And as we've read here today, of course, Satan is behind this great system that's now forming. Read about it. Study this yourself. Daniel 8. Isaiah 10, Habakkuk 1, the book of Nahum. That's another prophecy we haven't even looked at here today. There's quite a lot for you to go through and to study and to be astonished by. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. Our headquarters is in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're broadcasting here from our Edstone campus in the UK. You can get the live stream anywhere in the world where you have internet access. Just go to kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your feedback, any questions or comments that you might have about this program or any others that we've produced. Send us those emails to td@kpcg.fm. It's good to be starting yet another week with you. Thank you for listening to us today, and we'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.